If you can stay, we want to just continue to ask you about the kind of changes that are being talked about in the New York State and countrywide in prisons. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
Healthcare open enrollment starts November 1st, and you only have 6 weeks to enroll or renew your coverage. The Affordable Care Act provides free preventive care like flu shots, mammograms, and checkups, but you have to sign up by December 15th. And if you already have coverage, you also have to renew by December 15th. Don't miss your chance to get covered. Financial assistance is available to make your plan affordable, so sign up today. For more information, visit healthcare.gov.
That's right. Do that now, because basically the health care, the whole Affordable Care Act has been sabotaged. You have less time to enroll. Open enrollment was cut in half by Trump. And they're not advertising it. They cut the advertising budget. So it's up to stations like us to let you know that it's open enrollment time. I mean, it's frustrating we have to do that, and time is almost out. So If you want health insurance, this is the time to register between now and December 15th. What do you think, Kyle?
I think we all ought to register and be healthy. I wouldn't want the alternative for anyone, including you, our dear listener.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you for that. I forgot to start the show. WUSB, listening to Tuesday, WUSB Stony Brook, it's time for Off the Wall. You know, the reason why I jumped right into things was because we're abbreviated tonight, so I guess I just sort of wanted to use every possible minute. So it's Off the Wall time here on Tuesday evening. I'm Manuel, that's Kyle.
This is Kyle checking in.
Yeah. We've had a busy day, all kinds of fun things, activities, preparing, working on projects, and, of course, not forgetting to come in here and do what we do every Tuesday night. 15 minutes less of it tonight, though, because of men's basketball coming up at 6:45. Affordable Care Act, that's important. I mean it. That's something that people need to know about, and there's been so little talk of it because the advertising budget was slashed.
And if it doesn't affect you directly because, say, you listen to our PSA and are dutifully looking into your options already, tell a friend. Think about those who did not hear that and are in much more dire treacherous straits as far as health goes, because, you know, they may not know either. So, I mean, you really... It's not just you that's affected, it's everyone. And their health, you know, is a part of your health. It's a healthy community. And we're doing our part. Do yours as much as possible.
Well said. Definitely well said. You know, we got some mail concerning my little adventure in the world of healthcare, where I got charged $1,300 for a physical here at Stony Brook because I chose to go outside my plan, and boy, did they ever come after me for doing that. The way it should be, you know, you should just be able to opt into a plan or opt out of a plan, but if you opt out of the plan, it shouldn't be to your detriment. It shouldn't be something that you're penalized for. I've yet to write the first letter about this. I will. I've just been very, very busy. But that hasn't stopped our listeners from writing in. Tito says, I recently listened to last week's episode. I was taken aback by the amount you were charged for a physical. I then realized why typically insurance companies pay 100% for physicals. Doctors' offices know this, so they charge more for these services, knowing the insurance companies will pay for it, and patients don't care about the cost. Sorry you had to be the one to learn this. I would fight this. My guess is the doctors always end up waiving most of the fees. Well, we'll see about that. But I think you're right, Tito. I think that's exactly what's happening, because physicals, or wellness visits as they're called, are covered by insurance companies regardless of your deductible. Once a year, you do get that. They probably ratchet up the cost incredibly if you pay for it out of pocket. That's how I wound up with this epic bill that I've never... You know, the funny thing is, I had the same exact thing done a year ago. You know, same quote-unquote physical, which really not much more than a conversation. And, it was a couple $100. It wasn't anything like this. So, I don't know. I don't know what shenanigans are going on. I just know that our system is broken. I know Trump is sabotaging it even more. I do know that when you have health care, it is a good thing. And, you know, the one thing that people seem to be giving Trump credit for here, mistakenly, which is usually what it is if you're giving Trump credit for something, is that he took away the mandate that said you have to get insurance. Because a lot of young people say, why should I have to get insurance? Yeah, I'm healthy. I shouldn't be paying this. You're saving me money by not charging me a penalty if I don't get insurance. To which I say, you fool. You idiot. You moron. There's other words I can use, but like I said, we're abbreviated tonight. If you don't have insurance and something happens, and things happen, to people of all ages in this country, you can lose everything. You can lose your house. You can lose your things that are inside your house. You can lose you can go bankrupt, totally bankrupt for a long period of time. You can be financially ruined because you don't have money to pay for medical expenses. Insurance, at least in theory, covers that. And that is why everybody needs insurance. Now, when you're young and healthy, you pay less, a lot less. In fact, so many people pay less than $80 a month. I didn't know this because I pay way more than that. But, you know, people who are just starting out, they pay the Affordable Care Act. That's what it's for, to make it affordable. So it's very little. And by being part of the system, that brings down the cost for those people who are older, who pay more, and who need more medical treatments and things. So the system works if everybody participates. The system stopped working if all of a sudden people are given exemptions and the whole thing is sabotaged.
Yeah, clarify that other part. Those young people who do contribute will ultimately see their rates increase over time as they age out of certain groups for insuring and need more and more services that are costly, whether you're provided for by your company or you have a private plan. At some point, you will age and be right in a group where you're paying more and you're in need of more services. So to contribute to that, it's incumbent upon you to get covered and, of course, then have a little bit of peace of mind when you're out being youthful and enjoying and working and living your life. And that is critical because you absolutely can. You'll have collections and other creditors coming after you on behalf of the healthcare industry.
In no other Western civilization can you lose your home because you get sick. I mean, when you say it like that, it sounds so barbaric. You know, something that has absolutely, you know, you have absolutely no fault in, no responsibility for this happening to you. Something unfortunate could happen to anybody. And without the right kind of coverage, without coverage at all, you lose everything. And in other places, it's automatic. And yeah, people pay for it in their taxes, and they still wind up paying less than us in taxes because they don't waste money on all kinds of military adventurism and other things and tax rebates for rich people and stuff like that.
But by not ruining people, by getting them the coverage, they can become able again once their health condition and other necessities are there for them. Mm-hmm. They're then, you know, working and contributing and participating in the community, whereas if we're just ruining individuals' lives on a case by case, we're slowly kind of chipping away at the community that we all rely on, and those individuals don't deserve to be destitute from one mishap or one injury or diagnosis they get. They should have an opportunity to continue their life's work and dreams.
Yes, it's just so sad and so strange that we don't see this as a priority. That we instead focus on, well, why am I paying for somebody else? Or all these people are taking advantage. That's not what's happening. What's happening is you're being manipulated. You're being told that there are all these evil people ripping you off. And in fact, everybody is really just out for the same thing: to stay healthy, to stay alive, to you know, pursue happiness, all that nice stuff. And we can get there if we work together. And we can tear it all apart if we are at each other's throats, which is what we're seeing right now. So, this is just one thing. This is just one thing that we can talk about as far as problems that have to be addressed, have to be completely overhauled. Here's another letter on the same subject from Citizen D. While staying as an out-of-stater in Hot Springs, Arkansas a couple of years ago, I began having pain in my right ear. Ever since a brain injury in the mid-1970s, I've had pain on the side of my head where damage was inflicted. Another effect has been buildup of material in my ears, which I've read is not uncommon in brain injury sufferers. And since I've been sleeping in campgrounds in a tent, I was afraid an insect might have taken up lodging inside my ear canal. Yeah. After waiting about 4 hours in the emergency room, I was led to an exam room where eventually a doctor dug a pretty large quantity of material out of my ear. She didn't say what it was, but I'm thinking it was dried blood forced out of my ear as a result of that brain trauma 30 years earlier. Might also have been wax. You know, a lot of that builds up in there, too. But I don't know. Let's not fixate on it too much. I was handed a bill that said I owed $300 immediately. I didn't have $300 at the time. Didn't want to trust the medical industrial complex with my credit card number. A month or so later, when I had the $300, I went to the hospital to pay. I was directed across the street where the office of the doctor who treated me had her office. I walked there and paid. Then I received another bill, this time from the hospital whose emergency room I'd waited in. They billed me an additional $700 for use of their facilities. By this time, my father had just passed and left me a few $1,000, so I paid the remaining. Not having a permanent address, I guess I could have just not paid either bill and they would have had trouble tracking me down. But this illustrates how patients are taken to the cleaners by hospitals. I didn't mind paying that fine doctor for her work, but for the Hot Springs Medical Center, the only hospital in town, to charge $700 for making me wait 4 hours in their quote-unquote emergency waiting room, then another 20 minutes in the exam room is shameful. According to Adam of Adam Ruins Everything, which I'm hearing nothing but quotes from, it's largely due to abusive charging justified by something called the Charge Master Table of Recommended Charging Medical Charging. And the best part of this letter is at the end. As I write this, I'm horrified at a new Google feature that is trying to predict what I'm going to type next and filling it in for me. Thank you so much, Citizen D, for that. You are a kindred spirit for sure. Yeah, we're all horrified by that. Absolutely. But you know what? I think you might have gotten off a little bit easy with the hospital because I've seen them charge so much more. 4 hours in their waiting room. It doesn't matter if you're sitting in the waiting room of the ER. You're in the ER, so... You know, that's like a four-star hotel treatment, then. You could easily have been charged several $1,000s. That's what happens all the time. Insurance covers this. This is what we need insurance for. Also, urgent care facilities are great. You don't have to go to the ER every time something happens. You go to urgent care. Lots of times it's covered by insurance, even if you're out of state. And they're popping up everywhere. They've got some pretty good people there.
Yeah, and having those services and everything sort of set up already through your provider will set you up such that you do not end up in the emergency room unless you absolutely need to be there.
Right, right. It should only be for emergencies, and we shouldn't have very many of those. So if you find yourself going there a lot, there's probably something that can be done better.
But there's telemedicine, there's, you know, all these things you can make use of that become a part of your coverage and are kind of cool. There's, you know, messaging.
What's telemedicine?
I don't know, talking to a nurse on the phone and asking about medication you're trying or side effects and all those things. You can sort of mitigate the need to be in front of a doctor. And when you don't have that, you end up just going when things are really bad, and instead of having sort of ongoing care and a conversation about your wellness in general, which it's underutilized. There's a lot of different things like messaging and information abilities to communicate and keep track of your own health.
Well, they don't tell you about these things.
No. You have to find out, and that's why I think it's so good that we're reminding people about the open enrollment period that is going on right now.
Mm-hmm. And when does it end, Kyle? Let's see if you're paying attention.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it's ending.
It's okay if you get it wrong. In fact, you'll prove my
January
point.
January 1st. No.
God, that's a good date. Say it.
Was it January 15th?
Of what year?
2019.
See, that's what a lot of people think. But they're wrong. They're wrong. You'd be out of insurance.
It's December 15th.
It's December 15th. And I think it used to be January 15th or sometime in January.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what they're doing. They're sabotaging the system. Mm-hmm. And it's just so insane. And we're seeing sabotaging of so many systems. And it's starting, you know, people are starting to wake up. And that's a good thing, I guess. But, you know, the harm is done. And obviously we can still fix things. But we need to really buckle down and start working on it. We saw General Motors, all those jobs lost because they're closing plants. And there was a quote from sometime, I think it was last summer, of General Motors saying that, you know, the economic environment of tariffs is making it very difficult. It was a warning. And now, you know, this is probably one of a few reasons, but it certainly didn't help that there are these tariffs that are increasing charges for all sorts of things. And now 15,000 jobs, is it? Was it more than that? It's a lot of jobs.
I don't know. I haven't followed the story to the number, but I'm thinking it's around 20,000 or so. And you also have to take into consideration the other businesses and so on that in those communities, those auto workers were the driving force. They were the ones that were buying lunches and improving their homes and so on in the communities where those factories are, and there is not a lot of industry exactly, like that, or insofar as something they can just walk into to replace the kind of coverage and benefits and so on that allowed them to, members of that community that are, economic drivers, as I said.
Yeah, so this is having an effect on the working class, on those blue-collar workers, many of whom supported Trump. And now I think they're seeing what is actually happening, what the game plan actually produces. And, you know, Trump will blame General Motors. He'll blame everybody but himself, but his policies. Everybody is against him. Everybody is evil. And, you know, to an extent, I'm sure there is a degree of that in General Motors, but this is the reality. Jobs aren't coming back. Jobs are leaving. The economy will fall apart as a result of things like this. You may have a temporary high. You may have a tax rebate 1 year, but never again. These are things that take time to realize, and unfortunately a lot of damage is done in that time. We had the horrible fires out in California. You know, that Trump was blaming people not raking the forest because it wasn't even a damn forest, the last one. It's totally insane. A direct result of climate change. Everybody with any knowledge of science agrees that that is a factor in all of these fires that now occur year-round in California. Year-round. Used to be a fire season. And now it's all the time. All the time they are at risk of this. And when the fires end and the rains come, then the mudslides begin. You know, all of this is related to climate change. And yeah, you can say, where's climate change? It snowed today somewhere. Weather is not the same thing as climate. I mean, if I can understand that, how is it that the President of the United States cannot understand that? It's really, really simple. And if you keep ignoring it, it keeps getting worse. Here's another indication. His own people, the people who work for him, put out a study saying that by the end of the century, the temperature is going to go up by a couple of degrees Fahrenheit, resulting in hundreds of billions of dollars every year in expanded health costs, in all kinds of other fighting of climate change that will have to be undertaken. It's going to be very, very grim. They're talking about things like putting chemicals in the air to help block out the sun. Literally, to make the sun less hot, spraying the atmosphere. When that happens, your civilization's pretty much on the way out. That's what they're talking about. How about romaine lettuce? Yeah, you know, that could have been stopped if Trump hadn't cut the funding to test the romaine lettuce and all sorts of other things for E. coli. And now we're seeing the effects of that. So, you know, this is going to happen. I think almost every week we're going to see another example of something happening as a result of cutting these things, of destroying things that are beneficial, of negating science and fighting common sense. I don't know. Will that be enough? Will that be enough to convince people that, yeah, this is the wrong path to go down? Look at today in Mississippi. There's an election today in Mississippi. All right, the runoff election for U.S. Senate. We've got this woman, Cindy Hyde Smith, the Republican. What's the word when someone's already in power?
Incumbent.
Incumbent, thank you. Occasionally I have these gaps.
Uh-huh.
I kept wanting to say challenger, but no, she's not the challenger. She's the incumbent.
She's the incumbent challenger.
Well, no, she's just basically the incumbent. She is the way things are right
now. Placeholder, status quo.
And she's about as racist as a racist could possibly be. She's the one who said that, if one of my supporters invited me to a public hanging, I'd be in the front row. Why would you say something like that in Mississippi, for God's sake, where there's kind of a history of public hangings and racism and horrors and things like that? This picture of her posing with Confederate flags. At one point, she said, there is nothing more important than our gun rights. Nothing more important. Nothing. Nothing at all. Not our health, not our safety, not our prosperity, not our civil rights. Nothing. The most important thing is having a gun. That is the incumbent. And that is the person who is widely predicted to win today. Yeah, Trump had two rallies yesterday in Mississippi. Two. Saying this is the most important election in your lifetime to the people there. And you just have to wonder, do they not see this at all? I mean, they probably don't. Now, she's running against Democrat Mike Espy, who, in the very unlikely event, is elected. He would be the state's first black senator since Reconstruction. And this will finalize the balance of power in the U.S. Senate. As it stands now, Republicans will hold 52 seats next year. Democrats will hold 47. And if they win today in Mississippi, the Republicans would further pad the party's majority in the Senate, even as Democrats have taken a solid majority in the House. I was listening on the way in, and 9 million more Democratic votes for House races. 9 million more. You know, and they're looking at getting 40 seats overall. But when you add up the numbers, you add up the actual physical numbers of people who voted, it doesn't really reflect how many people are put in power because of all the gerrymandering. So it's both inspiring and frustrating at the same time.
Yes, it's a slow system. So we've got to be patient, I think, and really seize the control we have as participants and citizens and watch these kinds of things. It's great to get that perspective, because it hasn't felt like there's been as much going on or look forward to, but it'll be exciting in the new year.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I am. It's just, I'm frustrated because I want more. I expect more. You know, I'm very, very disappointed in Suffolk County for putting that guy Zeldin back in power, you know, and the things he has said, refusing to condemn the white supremacist march in Charlottesville, being among the first to condemn refugees trying to come to our country peacefully. These are horrible things. And we may say that we expect to see that in Mississippi, which I don't think is completely fair, but it is a common perspective. You don't expect to see it here at home. You don't expect to see it right here at Stony Brook.
You sure as hell shouldn't welcome it.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And it's just sad to see somebody completely following Trump. Even before Trump says something stupid, they're there to say something stupid. And we see this reflected throughout the country in various ways. But, yeah, you know, I would love to be surprised tonight in Mississippi to, you know, like in Alabama where they put a Democrat in over a child molester. That was nice. That was a good move for Alabama. I don't know. Can Mississippi put somebody in power over a renowned racist and somebody who clearly does not get it, and you know, pushes a revisionist view of the Civil War? There was this picture of her posing with all kinds of Confederate artifacts, saying Mississippi history at its best. You know. Imagine having, you know, Nazi memorabilia in Germany saying that, because it's not that different. It really is not.
Yeah, come on. I mean, that is just like adopting the tropes and the symbolism of what she feels is the base or what is the audience to dog whistle to, and it just is so blatant and kind of gross, because she may not even, I mean, I don't want to give her that much credit, but she knows what she's doing. And to say it's at its best, I mean, even in an ironic sense, that's so so cynical and not funny.
And the thing that really gets me is the demonizing of the other side, as if the Democrats are, you know, some kind of invader, some kind of alien, some kind of animal. You know, they've been saying in Mississippi, we don't want another Alabama here. Now, when you hear somebody say that, we don't want another Alabama, you think of something like, fire hoses, knocking down peaceful protesters. You think of lynchings. You think of murders of all sorts and racism over the decades and centuries. You think of that when you hear somebody say, we don't want another Alabama here. What they mean is they don't want another Democrat elected like Doug Jones was. That's what they think is the great horror, that a Democrat could possibly get elected. Why in God's name is that such a bad thing? You know, it's not like there aren't good people in Mississippi. There are plenty of good people in Mississippi. It's just that, wow, there are so many misled people in Mississippi that think their interests are being represented by this backwards way of thinking and by this exclusionary way of thinking. They call, you know, the people on the coast elitist. And they are to a degree, absolutely. But is it not elitist also to try and shut out everybody who does not look like you, every minority group, everybody who is from a different place? I think that's pretty damn elitist.
And just the lack of, I think, intelligence and forethought to take a sort of enlightened stance on something you have such a close contact with, being your state's history, the part of the world that and where that fits in U.S. history. I think those Mississippians and others in the area could really acknowledge and speak to that. And by enlightened, I mean taking a view that, you know, I may be a conservative, or I may be a religious person in this way, or disagree with the Democrats or unions or other entities in other ways, but I don't agree with the hate, and I'm going to participate actually against some of my other interests, but on principle, because you're taking an enlightened view of what is human, what is important, what we know, and what you know, your extensive appreciation of Southern history. Well, show it. You know, don't represent the other side. It just seems so basic. And you know, you can be intelligent enough to say that, you know, these people are using this in you know, a political ways, and it is dangerous. And yeah, I'm conservative, but I'm sure I'm more Mississippian, or I'm more an American than what this trope and these symbols mean, or what they mean mm-hmm. is to me more important and deeper than how it's being used rhetorically.
Thing is, you know, I really like Mississippi. We've been there.
Yeah.
And there was just something about it that really spoke to me. It's you know, we were going through it on the train at one point. I just noticed how dark it is, and in a good way, you know, dark as in, you know, forest and nature, and just a lot of possibility and in a positive way. I'm not turning, you know, my glance away from the negative, but I'm not fixating on it either. There is so much there that is good, and that should be focused upon. We should not be constantly demeaning Mississippi and saying bad things about them or any other state. But sometimes people make it hard. They really do, by embracing what is so evil and bad and not the best parts of history. Maybe we can make that easier by being, you know, a bit more welcoming. But, you know, someone's got to make the first move here. Someone's got to move in a somewhat enlightened direction, which sure be nice.
Yep.
So, anyway, I guess we have to talk about what happened at the border a couple of days ago. Boy, that was a low point in this nation's history.
Yeah, speaking of systems and things that are sorely in need of reform and rebuilding in so many ways, this immigration fiasco, I would say, is pretty unbelievable, pretty astounding.
Yeah, I mean, for those who are listening in the future, or those who might not have been paying attention, basically some members of the migrant caravan finally reached the border of Mexico and the United States, and keep in mind that these are refugees. These are people that are fleeing from all sorts of horrible conditions. And when I say horrible conditions, you know, we watch Vice News and we see all these documentaries, and we see the hell that so many people are living through in you know, places like Yemen, places like Honduras, places like Syria, places all over the world. There is no continent other than Antarctica that is not affected by this. And they are trying to get to a land where they have some promise, much like many of our ancestors did once. And while they may not have been welcomed with open arms, they still managed to have a chance. And what we're doing is denying these people the chance. Why? Well, we're not full. I'm pretty sure we still have space. I'm pretty sure we still need people to do things. Might be because their ethnicity is not desired at the moment. Might be because people think there aren't enough people that look like them around anymore, that their cities are changing. We've even heard people in power saying things like this, that our country is no longer the way that we recognize it, that it's going down a different ethnic path, and horrible things like that. Real blatant racism and nationalism, which our president is an admitted nationalist as well. So anyway, you have all these people that are trying to get here, and what Trump has done illegally is deny them the ability to apply for refugee status. You know, it used to be you just come to the States, you say, I'm in fear for my life. Either my government is out to kill me, or it's an untenable situation at home with gangs, with drugs, with God knows what. There are many, many reasons. And you can apply for refugee status. And you're given a hearing. And guess what? You can stay in the country while you await your hearing. Much like, you know, we can just pick up and go someplace tomorrow. You know, pick a country. Spain? Yeah, we just go to Spain. And once we're in Spain, we say, hey, we'd like to apply for refugee status because, you know, Trump is just too much for us. They'll say, okay, here's some forms, fill it out, and you have a hearing in 2 weeks. Come back for the hearing. You know, that's how the system works. That's how the system is supposed to work. And you may say, oh, well, none of the people come back for their hearings. They just escape. They just escape into the mainstream and start raping and pillaging. Yeah, that's not what happens at all. That's not what happens. The vast, vast majority of people come back for their hearings because they want to be citizens. They want to be a part of this land. But what Trump has done is make it impossible for them to even apply, making it impossible for them to get into the country to apply. So what happens? They make it to the border and there's no place for them to go. No place for them to go at all. What would you do in a situation like that? Well, some people the other day thought there was an opportunity to get to the border or to get into the country so that they could take the next step, apply for refugee status. And you see people, when they're caught by the Border Patrol, they're surrendering themselves. They're not trying to escape. They're trying to be caught so that they can apply for refugee status. You see that all the time. But when they're not given the opportunity to do this, they're stuck in another country where they don't want to be and where the people are clearly hostile towards them. It's a really bad situation. So people saw an opportunity the other day and with their families, with their children, ran towards the border as we would do the same damn thing and were met with tear gas and riot police. It was disgusting, absolutely disgusting.
They closed the road passage at one of the busiest border crossings in the United States.
In the world.
And, you know, severely, I think, hampering the flow of legitimate goods and individuals crossing just like any other day.
Mm-hmm. And these are legitimate crossers as well. I maintain that.
I mean, where's the quantitative analysis of that economic loss? Just for the couple hours that you do something like that because of a couple hundred people and to rough them up, to show irreverence to legitimate, I think in many cases, legitimate circumstances where people have a right, as you said, mm-hmm. to seek that asylum. It's a really poor state, poor way to handle it. But it's, as people noted, I think, in the media, that it is kind of a the type of symbol that Trump is benefiting from, because it conjures these so-called violent immigrants, but it's people resisting violence perpetrated against them in seeking that refuge, and they're just trying to get a better circumstance for themselves, and in no way are invading, as you know, like you would imagine, with weapons or force of any kind. They're fleeing other circumstances, and we're met with this.
Yeah. And it was really a low point in our history to be meeting potential citizens in this manner. Now, you know, 1,000 people, how many people were there? A few hundred people, 1,000 people, even if it's more than that. Yeah, it's a lot of people to process. But we can do it. You know, any ship that came into Ellis Island had hundreds and hundreds of people on it. They were processed. And usually walking in New York City later the same day. It's not a huge deal to accept these people, to give them a chance, unless you're afraid of them, unless you think that they're all out to get you somehow. And that is what Trump has been doing. And it's really disturbing how successful that has been, you know, and how he's gotten away with this. This is really a crime against humanity to do this to kids, to children, to see them choking on tear gas. You know, tear gas isn't even allowed in war situations because it really messes you up. I think Trump now is saying that there's safe tear gas or something crazy like that. You know what? If you believe in it so much, let's pump the White House full of that safe tear gas. Yeah, you do. Because this is outrageous. This is something that, you know, some serious questions need to be answered. And these people need to be treated as human beings.
Is that like children's cough syrup?
It's to him. Who knows? It's
strawberry flavored.
And you know, to see, I think even more disturbing than to see how Trump deals with this, because you know, I expect this from him, to see how other people are reacting, saying things like, well, next time it should be bullets, not tear gas. You know, people actually believe that. And people buy into the whole rhetoric that these people are attacking us. You know, language used even in fairly neutral press reports from Associated Press or Reuters that refer to them in military terms, refer to the refugees in military terms, saying that they retreated or that they were advancing as if it's some kind of an invading army. These are people, husbands, wives, children. Look at them. Look at their faces. And tell me this is an army. You know, it's so disgusting. It makes me embarrassed. And, you know, if there was something I could do to let these people in, just to let them in, I would do it without hesitation. You know, damn the penalties.
It's such a passive stance with your country too. To make other people the problem with your situation and circumstance, and then to defend at all costs and project your ire to that group, but not actually affect change within your country. Like, what are you building? You're standing around, not oppressing, but just wholesale being aggressive towards, and I really strongly feel it's like a projection. While your country sort of continues to tailspin, I mean, I guess, I don't know.
Oh, we're tailspinning, all right.
Stock market. I mean, I don't know whatever you want to measure that by. But, I mean, it seems like you could perpetually be upset at the other and only focus on your borders and think that is the entirety of your being, you know, your reason for being.
Mm-hmm.
But you're continuing to protect something that's still broken and not getting better. And who is actually affecting any of that? It's still wealth is still being extracted, right? People are still losing jobs and stuff, and your primary focus is to be at the border and gas kids. You know what, at a certain point, what are you defending? I feel the same way about sort of the Khashoggi murder thing, because it's about
right.
journalism, and if the state and the federal apparatus doesn't stand for the ideals that we expect out of our partners and allies, then what are we defending? What are those military elite alliances and weapons? What are they really for? Mm-hmm. Is it then it's just abjectly for profit?
They're defending fear, they're defending prejudice, they're defending ignorance, because that is what all of this is tied up in. It's not based on anything real, just fear and prejudice, you know, of people coming into this country that come from a different culture. You know, we can learn so much, we can exchange so much, we can improve the world in so many ways, whether it's in their home countries or whether it's here, and they can improve our land as well. There's one person in particular, a refugee from Honduras named Roxana Hernandez, and she was part of a caravan in May organized by the group Pueblo Sin Fronteras. She basically was a transgender and was fleeing Honduras because of the way transgender people are discriminated against. And she left there with hopes of living a better life, was detained in May, and she was basically killed in prison, in our prison. She died just weeks after she arrived in the United States, after presenting herself at the San Ysidro Port of Entry in May, and while in custody at the Cibola County Correctional Center in New Mexico. She developed severe diarrhea, vomiting, was transferred to a hospital. And the autopsy basically detailed deep bruising on her rib cage, deep contusions on her back, indicative of blows, kicks, possible strikes with a blunt object. Her wrist showed deep, soft tissues and musculature bleeding, which is ever typical of injuries from handcuffs. According to observations of other detainees who were with Ms. Hernandez-Rodriguez, the diarrhea and vomiting episodes persisted over multiple days with no medical evaluation or treatment until she was gravely ill. This is on us, and this is how we are treating people. And that's just one sad ending. Doesn't take into account all the people separated from their families, doesn't take into account the way that people are viewed when they first arrive at our borders. Folks, we have to do better than this. We have to do better. You know, tonight in Mississippi, that's a good first start if something changes there. But I don't have much in the way of hope. I have to tell you that. Okay, we're out of time because we have basketball coming up in just a couple of minutes. But, Kyle, thank you for joining us tonight.
Yeah. Thanks for the conversation. And we'll be back again next Tuesday evening.
That's right, yes, as we try to do every Tuesday evening. Oh, yeah, and you can write to us, otw@2600.com. Yeah.